Where I was born, nothing is promised. My life is filled with less hope than the prophecies of Nostradamus. Omega marks the ending of predictability, birth of agility. Who will it be to test me and expose its utility? Iron like a lion from Zion, stop trying so hard. I think I smell your brain cells frying. The family's behind you if you're worthy. Philosophies develop deep in the back streets of Dirty Jersey. Troops with skelly hats and Timberland boots. No more break dancing for loot. Niggas hustling and shoot in the Garden State.
Okay, so I got really angry the other day when I saw this, and I knew right away when I saw it that it would make a better radio story than an on-the-page story. But it's about a certain son of a bitch named Zell Miller. See the big headline, Miller to honor Swift Boat Vets Group. And at first, when I saw that, I thought that prick Dennis Miller was going to get out there and blow all the Swift Boat veterans for making the war hero into a coward, while the cocaine deserter was elevated to mythical status as the bravest warrior America's ever had. It just shows you the power of the lying whore media. But here we got Zell Miller. Now let me tell you a little bit about this. For one night only, it'll be spitballs and swift boats together on the same stage, a who's who of John Kerry bashing. The American Conservative Union on Thursday announced it tapped Senator Zell Miller, our whore, to represent the Courage Under Fire Award to the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth at the Conservative Political Action Conference's February 18th banquet. The courage it took for these men to take money from Karl Rove and get in front of a camera and lie about a man who still has shrapnel in his body. Think of the courage it took for them to lie. And everybody knows the details that even the people, one guy, and as always, I need a news director, I need a detail guy, but one of the main accusers that said John Kerry lied about being under fire when he did these actions, that same bastard got a medal for being under fire at the same battle. On his own merit of whatever it was, it said for courage under fire, and he got a medal for that, and then he got in front of a camera and swore that there was no fire. And because John Kerry was an idiot, these guys got away with that. And here's Zell Miller. You got to figure, to some degree, Zell Miller and Kerry were friends, and if not friends, at least nodding acquaintances. I mean, there's only 100 people in this stupid, fucked-up club. And that's another thing that pisses me off. You know, when a monster like John Ashcroft was getting ready to be confirmed in 2001, they said, well, we have to vote for him because he was in the club. He was in the club. So no matter how religiously insane this bastard is, we're going to put him in charge of America and the law enforcement, even though we know he's crazy and insane and will do anything. If he thinks it'll please God, the invisible cloud man, he'll do anything, no matter how crazy, that'll put the Constitution second. No matter all that, we're still going to confirm him because he was in the club. And in the club, we're tight and we do things for each other. And now here's Zell Miller. I assume he was with Kerry probably the whole 18, 20 years, whatever it was, in the Senate. But here's his close, you got to figure close friends. 20 years with 100 people, Christ. Think how, back to your high school, grade school, whatever, you got 30 kids, 25 kids in a class, and after just 8, 9 months, you kind of know everybody pretty well, don't you? Didn't you speak to everybody in your class, you know, a couple of times a week for months and months? Now here, these two, there's only 100 people, and they've been there 18, 20 years, somewhere like that. So Miller and Kerry had to be, and I don't even know if Miller had any wartime. I don't know his background, but to trash a man, a friend of his that he knows was a war hero, to lead the charge like that. Oh, and the reference in the first paragraph I read you to the spitballs, he said if John Kerry, remember in this big NaziCon 2004 address, Zell Miller said, if John Kerry gets elected, he's going to go after Osama with spitballs because he voted against every single armament proposal, every single one of them for 20 years, which isn't even possible. But of course, since Kerry refused to fight back, every charge made against him became a fact. But the son of a bitch, Zell Miller, now he's going to go give the Courage Under Fire Award. Well, excuse me, they said there was no fire. The Under Fire, they showed this Courage Under Fire. I guess the Under Fire was the non-fire that came from the Cary camp. But somehow, he's going to go award these people with the medals. He's going to give them the Courage Under Fire Award at the Conservative Political Action Conference on February 18th banquet. Says Miller and a group of Vietnam veterans were behind perhaps the campaign's two fiercest and most memorable attacks on Kerry's unsuccessful presidential bid. Miller, who is retiring, scorched Kerry in a NaziCon 2004 keynote address in which he suggested the four-term Massachusetts Democrat had voted to cut so many weapon systems, it appeared he wanted to send the military to war with only spitballs. And it doesn't matter that the things that Kerry voted against were also voted against by Cheney and Rumsfeld and whoever else was in the government at the time. Because remember, all this downsizing happened when after the Berlin Wall fell. That's when all the downsizing happened. Kerry didn't make the Berlin Wall fall. Well, he did in that he voted for the arms increases. When people give credit to Reagan for building up the military, but when you try to give Reagan the blame for spending the money, they say, oh, no, the president can't spend money. Well, then that proves that Reagan didn't build up the military that made Russia cave in. All Reagan ever did was say, tear down this wall, as though those four words somehow magically coalesced into some giant hand coming out of the sky and pushing the wall down. None of that happened. But unless the people with the truth fight back, the lie is going to become the real history. The Swift Boat Veterans for Truth ran ads after the Democratic Convention questioned whether Kerry was in fact the decorated war hero he claimed to be. The Swift Boat Veterans performed an invaluable service to America, Miller said. Those veterans took a lot of undeserved criticism for daring to speak the truth. He knows that's a lie. He knows that. The son of a bitch. And because Kerry and the Democrats refused to fight back, the lie became the truth. Think of it. In 20 years now, say you're getting married this month. 20 years from now, your kids are going to be in high school or college, or whatever, and when they read their history class, they're going to say, oh, the fake imposter Kerry tried to go up against godly and fearless leader George W. Bush, and thank God the people saw the truth and didn't allow the war imposter, who actually inflicted his own wounds. He took shrapnel from North Vietnam and put it inside his body so deeply that the surgeons couldn't get to it, but he was lying. And the idea that Bush deserted a drunken cocaine monkey during wartime in 1971, well, he's our godly leader who never makes a mistake, so that's okay. Oh, it's just so maddening. I'm in a party that refuses to fight back, and we got traitors. Maybe it's a Miller. Maybe he just got tired of being in a party that refused to fight back, and he just said, fuck it, and went to the other side so he could be with a winner. I guess that happens. It happens a lot in primary campaigns. You know, like you're really for Kucinich, but you know, he's got no chance. He's got as much chance as Alan Keyes does of winning his party's nomination. So even though you like Kucinich, you're going to gravitate over to Dean or to Kerry or to Clark or somebody who might have a chance. It makes me wonder if this is one of those, that Zell Miller knows that the Democrats are just one total failure after another. So he just decided, screw it. I'm going to write a book about how my party left me. And you know, if you're a Democrat and you write a book about the Democrats, you're going to make a whole lot of money. If you're a Republican writing an anti-Democrat book, well, you're from the other party. What do you expect? So Zell Miller made a whole lot of money trashing his own party. And listen to the son of a bitch lying here. These veterans took a lot of undeserved criticism for daring to speak the truth. Zell Miller, you are a whore. Everybody knows it, but nobody's willing to say it. Oh, it's just amazing. And that brings us to part two. Part two isn't going to make you any happier than part one. And yeah, you may want to go get you a drink, may want to use the restroom, clear your throat, grab a sandwich. This isn't going to be too long. It's just so maddeningly enraging. Ugh. Big headline, Kerry Camp says it underestimated ads. The campaign manager for John Kerry's failed presidential bid said Wednesday she regrets underestimating the impact of the Swift Boat ads. Mary Beth Cahill, speaking at Harvard, said Kerry's campaign initially thought there would be no reach to the ad from the Swift Boats. Instead, the ad, which initially aired in three states, became a central issue of the campaign. This is the best $40,000 investment made by any political group, but it was only because of the news coverage that it got where it did, she said stupidly. In hindsight, maybe we should have put Kerry out there earlier. Perhaps we should have cut it off earlier. Earlier than fucking never, you mean? Did you ever refute that once? About 6 or 8 weeks went by when you were absolutely, totally silent, and I think after the 6 or 8 weeks you said, nuh-uh. I think that was your big giant comeback to the 8 weeks of monstrously wall-to-wall, every son of a bitch on TV said, oh, the Veterans for Truth, they're the ones to be. Kerry's lying about his war record. He's lying about that shrapnel on his ass. He's lying about those, oh, they give those medals to anybody with a congressman. And then, of course, when you ask about Bush and his honorable discharge, they say, well, the Army just doesn't give those things out because you got a congressman. What, are you crazy? Just because he was the son of a CIA director? You think that had anything to do with him getting out honorably? Meanwhile, this imposter, Kerry, with a shrapnel on his ass, we know he's lying. He's got a chest full of medals. How could he be telling the truth? What does he know about combat? He only went to Vietnam 3 times, only got a chest full of medals. What could he possibly know? Whereas Godly Bush, with his nose full of cocaine and a belly full of Jim Beam, he knows all about war. That's why he's handling this war in Iraq so successfully, because he's been there, done that. And the idea, Bush and Romney and them send all those men over there without the armor. Would Kerry have done that? Now, see, you can say Clinton never had been to war, but Clinton was smart enough, well, politically, he knew that if he made a military fuck-up, that would be the lead sentence in Clinton's legacy till the end of time. Oh, Clinton, because he was not in the military, made a big mistake. But no, since Bush sent 150,000 men over to Iraq without armor, and it's pretty easy to argue that he did that because he doesn't know what a man going into battle needs, but Kerry does know. And you know all that bullshit they talk about, oh, the $87 billion, he voted for it, and then he voted against it, and then he voted for it. Well, they said last night on 60 Minutes, I believe, if they're telling the truth, who knows, but they said we spend $2 billion a day just on interest payments to pay off the debt. So all this haggling about the $87 billion, well, that's only 44 days of interest on the debt. Why did we bother to talk for 6 or 8 months about the $87 billion? And that was one of the bigger points in the whole campaign because, again, Kerry refused to defend himself. But we spent all that time talking about $87 billion, and it's just 44 days worth of interest on the debt that Bush is sending out $2 billion a day to service the debt and the weak dollar and all that other stuff I don't understand. But $2 billion a day we're losing. And I don't know how many hundreds of millions or billions a day we're losing in Iraq or in Afghanistan, but all these billions are flying out the door, and most of it's going to China. Sorry, I got off the track. Mary Beth Cahill, in closing, she decided there was no need. You got Bob Shrum telling Kerry, you don't want to attack, you don't want to fight back, you don't want to do anything like that. And you got Mary Beth Cahill saying, oh, this whole Swift Boat Veterans thing, it'll blow over. It's only the biggest selling point you have, you're being a war hero. Why should we bother to defend our biggest asset? Mary Beth Cahill, how did you get in this business? How is it possible Kerry could have done a whole lot worse getting me in there? I don't know shit about running a campaign, but I guarantee I could do it better than Cahill and Bob Shrum. How is it possible for a war hero to lose to a crazy monkey who lied to get us into a war that's making his family rich? How is that possible? The same guy who ruined the economy. And somehow Kerry laid down and let this guy walk all over him. I get a lot of mail saying, Bart, it was obviously a skull and bones pact they made between them. And, you know, geez, how much do you put into something like that? The only thing that would give that a little credibility is how fiercely Kerry fought in the primaries. I mean, when it came time to beat up Howard Dean and Wesley Clark and the others, he was a monster. He was a lion. When it came time to fight Bush, he went snowboarding, and he went to NASA and put on another monkey suit. Why would he do that? Did Kerry throw the election on purpose to help his buddy George, his skull and bones buddy? Does the Bush campaign have pictures of Kerry engaging in gay homo sex? This is not a joke. They say, and I don't know, but they say when you join the Skull and Bones, they photograph you doing something. So if you get out of line, they're going to publish the photograph and ruin you forever. And one of the things they say they do is they have you engage in about 1 second worth of oral sex with another man, and they take a picture. So if you get out of line, they know how to get you back in line. They kind of own you forever. That's the price you pay to get into the secret club. And once you're in the secret club, then you and your children, your grandchildren, they're all going to be set up for life. There's this unique elite inner circle, people like the Bushes, that are above things like wars. That's how people like Prescott Bush did business with Hitler during the war. See, this was much bigger than FDR and Hitler. This was money. This, you know, the Rothschilds in France, they're famous for that, I think. But they did business with Hitler so he could invade France. This is, what do I know about history, but this is what I've heard, that the Rothschilds are like the Bush family, that they'll do business with anybody if it's going to make a profit, and it doesn't matter if they set the Statue of Liberty on fire, if they blow up the Eiffel Tower, if they, you know, put an atom bomb in the center of France. It just doesn't matter because this is business, and there's money to be made, and the Rothschilds and the Bushes, they just get all past all that. So who knows why Kerry lost this election? Mary Beth Cahill is not making me feel any better for her to get up a few months after the election and say, oh, that Swift boat ad? Who knew? Well, hey, crazy woman, if you had read BartCop.com, I was telling you every fucking day to do something. Stop laying there. Wake the hell up and join the fight. Get in this race or you're going to lose. I said it every day until the subscribers left in droves. I said it. But no, nobody wanted to listen to me. They wanted to hear Kerry the good closer. Kerry's going to win. Kerry in a landslide. I just don't understand. How does this keep happening to us? Can we endure a third one of these? I don't know who's going to run in 2008, if it's going to be Hillary or somebody else, but can we have our guy lay down a third time? Of the dozens of you listening to this, are you willing to stay with the Democrats if they lay down a third time in a row? Can we stand another 4 years of Bush after we get done with these four? And they're talking about McCain, they're talking about Giuliani. I don't think either one of them is going to be president. It's going to be somebody loyal to Bush, and neither of them are loyal to Bush. Well, Giuliani's pro-choice. He can't be president for the Republicans. But McCain could, but he's not loyalty. So somebody else, maybe Jeb, I guess we'll know pretty soon. They'll start grooming Jeb for the job, and they say Jeb has half a brain on him. Go figure. The idiot got in. Not the smart son. The idiot got to be president. Oh, and they reelected him because we put Kerry up to run against him. Oh, God, what am I doing in this party? What are we going to do? But in closing, Mary Beth Cahill, please get out of politics. And I'm sorry, but take Donna Brazile with you. I know she technically won her race, but how could Gore or Kerry, either one, lose to this idiot monkey? My God, how could you possibly do it?
Here's what I know about your professional situation. You announced a month ago, 6 weeks ago, that it was like 2006, 2005, you're leaving regular terrestrial broadcast radio and going to a Sirius satellite radio.
That's right. That's right. Thank you. It's a big decision for me.
Well, what precipitated this?
Well, you know, first of all, looking at my career, I've been in radio now over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And when I got into radio, Dave, all I wanted to do was to make the medium exciting. I wanted to get on the air, make people laugh and have a lot of fun and sort of restructure the way people listen to the radio. It was always boring and dull to me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And it became very exciting to be on the radio in recent years because of the government interference and what's been going on with the FCC, Clear Channel Broadcasting, doing my job every day has become increasingly difficult. And, you know, I liken it to if you watch HBO and you watch a Chris Rock concert, you go, wow, that guy's funny. Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. And right. it's blue and it's whatever his language is. If you were to take Chris Rock and put him on my radio station today, you'd have to cut out 99% of his material. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't laugh. You would think Chris Rock sucked if you watched him on my, you know, on my radio station or on a network. So it's become increasingly difficult to do my show. The same show I did a year ago, the government will fine me for. I have millions of dollars of fines against me. And this is my way of checkmating the United States government and saying, you know what, I've got somewhere to go. We're going to build a new future. This is the beginning of the new age.
Okay, now. That's good.
Thanks.
But you raise so many questions here. First of all, are you suggesting that without dirty material and things that would not be allowed on your radio show, Chris Rock is not funny? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I am suggesting that. I've seen Chris Rock in situations where he cannot be himself. And I can't be myself anymore on the radio. I'm not looking to get on the radio and say the F word. I'm not looking to get on the radio and make everything so blatantly sexual. That's not what this is about. I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago, the topics I used to talk about on the radio, I'm now being fined millions of dollars for. So where does it end? You know, just the other night, we see that on ABC, a woman took off her towel in front of a football player, and now we're talking about possible fines?
Right.
What's happened? I mean, it feels like we're in a religious country. This guy, Michael Powell, the son of Colin Powell, who is not elected to public office, he's telling us what we
Chairman
can hear.
Chairman of the FCC.
Chairman of the FCC is telling us what we can hear.
Okay, let me go back to what you said earlier. You're fighting three things. One, you mentioned Clear Channel.
Yep.
One, you mentioned the government specifically, and the FCC as the agency of the government. How are those three organizations, or how are those three entities conspiring or working, if not conspiring, against you?
Well, I mean, you know, I hate
is
to be so serious.
Conspiracy?
Yeah, it is a conspiracy. I hate to be so serious. Usually I come on here and, you know, we have lots of laughs. In fact, I'll pull down my pants. Dave will try to rub my buttocks. It'll be great. If you want to do that, we can do it now. It would be great to get a few FCC fines right here, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But again, tell me about it. Here's what I know about Clear Channel.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not paying attention to anything. I'm just doing my little dog and pony show here.
Right.
I read an article in Rolling Stone this summer.
Right.
Clear Channel owns 1,200 radio stations. Many stations in the same market. They've essentially wiped out individuality of the radio station and played havoc with the record industry and the music industry in live concerts. I was stunned.
Well, yeah.
Three corporations in this country control 60% or more of the radio audience. Three corporate entities.
Yeah, you know, when I made my decision to go to satellite radio, it wasn't one I made easily. I think I'm the first broadcaster to walk away from an empire. I mean, I make a lot of money for Viacom. I make a great living. I have millions of listeners. And I said to myself, I don't think I'm committing suicide going to pay radio. I think this is the beginning. This is the only place left to go. When you turn on that Sirius radio, which I listen to it all weekend, no commercials. I can go, I'm programming three channels over there now, and they will be revolutionary. I will be able to do what I want. So I'm walking away from something, millions of listeners.
Let me ask you a question. As I understand it, the reason there is government control of broadcasting the way you do it now is because you're broadcasting over the public airwaves.
That's right.
And that's a public trust.
Yes.
And the broadcasters have to protect that public trust. And if they violate that public trust, then there will be government intervention. Now, how is it any different if the radio signal is bounced off a satellite and then back down through the airwaves, and why won't you be subject to future restrictions at satellite radio?
Well, the difference is my listeners now, if they come with me, and I hope they do, and that's sort of why I'm here. You know, I want them to come. Your question, for 40 cents a day,
right,
when you pay for something, you're paying for it to come into your home, much like cable or anything else. And in the beginning of cable, everyone said, well, I'm not going to pay for TV. When you hear the difference, and when you hear the type of programming we can put on, you will see that 40 cents a day is not too much. And that's the reason the government cannot regulate it. If you're paying for it, it's not the public airwaves. We don't get any of this nonsense. You know, Fox was just fined $1.2 million for a show no one watched, and an ex-TV Guide writer went and researched. Three people complained. Three people complained. $1.2 million.
What was the show?
It was called Married to, I don't know what even the show was. Married to Something. It was one of these reality shows. Three people complained.
Mm-hmm.
How can we have a democracy? How can we have an open exchange of ideas? Yes, I mean, you know, we talk about sex, but come on. I mean, everywhere in Europe they talk about sex, and this is all taboo.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting fined. We're being told what we can listen to. It's time for a change. I'm going. Come with me, please. That's all I'm saying. Very simple.
Now,
and by the way, Dave, I've been unable to have this discussion on the radio.
Because, you know, they won't let you talk about it, right?
Yeah, they'll allow me to say Sirius Radio and things like that, but I can't really discuss with my audience how to convert over to satellite radio.
We'll explain that. But first of all, you work for Infinity, is that right? Which is owned by Viacom.
By this company.
Which also owns the CBS television network.
That's right. Yeah.
And I can remember years ago talking to you, you were complaining about, you can have a conversation using sexually explicit terms and be in trouble for it, whereas on the Oprah Winfrey show, she can talk about penis all day and nothing happens.
That's true. I did a thing where I was on the air talking about oral sex. And I used, I thought, fairly tame language. I got fined $1 million for that. Oprah Winfrey had a show about 13-year-old girls who are giving oral sex. They're high school kids, young kids, and the language was very graphic. And you compare the transcripts side by side, you'd say, well, if you're going to find me, you got to find Oprah.
Right.
And the chairman of the FCC said, you know what? We can't find Oprah because she's beloved and you're not. Well, look.
You know, I think Howard might have a point. Yesterday, I accidentally taped a little bit of Oprah. Tape player was running and Oprah came on. And they were talking about girls who were shanghaied away to Vegas to become prostitutes. And so I perked my ears up and I listened to a few minutes, and it reminded me of what Howard was just talking about. Oprah can get away with saying and doing pretty much anything, but Howard's an evil man. Check out a little Oprah.
Christina telling what happened to her just a few miles away from her home.
Just a few months ago, 18-year-old Christina says she and her friend were approached by three men at a car wash.
They had a lot of jewelry, diamonds, and they seemed very nice.
Christina says the men made them an incredible job offer, $32 an hour to be hotel managers.
They had business cards. Everything seemed so legit. It was like a dream come true.
2 days later, the girls flew to Vegas with the men. Christina says the men took them shopping and brought them sexy clothes. She says things got strange when the men wanted to change her name.
They were going to call me Princess, which I started feeling a little weird about. And we met up with another girl there that worked for them. She told us we were not going to be hotel managers, but we were going to be prostitutes. And I told them I wanted to go home, and they told me I couldn't.
Then, Christina says, she was paired with a woman who would train her and watch her every move.
I had to watch her perform oral sex. It was disgusting. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Another time, Christina says she felt like she had no choice but to dance topless.
I figured I'd rather dance than have oral sex with anybody. So I did a dance for 15 minutes, and he paid me $935.
After almost a week away from home, Christina says while her trainer slept, she escaped.
I had pajamas on and no shoes, and I got up and I ran. I ended up at the airport. From there, I went to a payphone to call my mom. My mom convinced me to go to security. The security got me on a plane, and that's how I made it home.
Now, I guess we could argue over which of the two, Oprah or Stern, had better motives here, but I suggest it might be Stern. I think Stern is more honest than Oprah. Oprah said earlier in the show that she heard about this phenomenon and she thought it might make a good story because it might happen to you. And did the parents know that they're... Yeah. In reality, she knows that sex sells. And teenage sex sells even better. And forced teenage sex sells even better. And forced teenage kidnapped sex in Vegas sells even better. If they promoted this show, this might have been the number one rated show that Oprah had of the year. But Stern, at least, is honest enough to talk about, whatever, the joys of oral sex or what it would be like to get oral sex from this woman or that woman or this movie star or that singer. And to me, that's just a little more honest than taking this lurid, sexy, if you call it that, subject and putting it under, oh, we need to educate ourselves to this problem in our community. I mean, no, please. It's just like every time Sweeps comes around, they do the sting on the prostitutes, or, you know, the hookers are taking over Main Street, Special 11, you know. Yeah, it's a problem all year round, but they somehow only get to it when it's ratings week. And it just shows the whoredom. I mean, you can't blame a business for trying to maximize their profits. I understand that. But why is Stern being punished for being honest about it? He wants to talk about the things that people want to hear. Oprah wants to deliver the things that people want to hear. She disguises her presentation under this education umbrella that I think is a bunch of crap. I think she didn't get to be the richest woman in America by accident. Let's just put it that way. But why are we punishing honesty and we are rewarding disingenuousness? I mean, come on, if Howard Stern opened up some education school so he could talk about oral sex, everybody would see that as a sham, wouldn't they? Well, funny how Oprah gets away with it. It just seems like there are two standards. And sure, it's a judgment call, who's doing what, but why have we got Michael Powell is deciding everything for everybody? And something else, damn, I got a big pile of stuff here. It's been so long since I did a radio show, it's deep in the pile. But there's this idiotic religious organization. It's People for the American Way or something like that. It's run, I think, by this Donald Wildman. And when this Michael Powell, this lying asshole son of Colin Powell, the admitted liar, worldwide liar that killed 100,000 Iraqis, he gets on the TV or he'll do an interview and say, oh, we've got over 100,000 complaints about Stern. And someone did some digging. I forget who. Might have been Air America, might have been somebody. But someone did some digging and found out all but three of the complaints came from this family, parent, council, hand job religious organization, which is a bunch of old ninnies sitting around. And if they hear the word breast or whatever, anything they hear, they just go berserk. And they get all their thousands of organized, you know, they get their little people together and they all fire off these complaints. So an idiot like Michael Powell can say, oh, I've got a million complaints. Well, turns out he got three complaints and 999,997 complaints from this Donald Wildman. And it's just another way that Bush and the BFE, they're taking control. They want to control everything. It's not enough that they control the oil in the world. It's not enough that they control the gold in the world. It's not enough that they have the United States Treasury in their pocket and they can send the U.S. military anywhere they want to murder and kill and steal anything they want. That's not enough. They want to control what's in your mind. They want you to, you have to believe in the same God that George Bush does, and you have to go by the morality they use. This moral group that lied so they could kill 100,000 Iraqis and 1,300 soldiers, these men of good character. Well, at least they didn't have sex with a girl. Now, see, that's bad character. That's what we all have to impeach. But if he's just going to lie us into 100,000 murders, well, now that's a godly thing. And, oh, we love George Bush. The whole country's gone fucking crazy. Can't anybody else see it?
Don't think that we don't know. Don't think that we're not trying. Don't think we move too slow. It's no use after crying, saying it's a mistake. It's a mistake. It's a mistake.
Now, at the beginning of the 60s, President Kennedy made that fantastic speech where he went to Berlin and he stood on the Berlin Wall and he said, people of Berlin, people of Berlin. I can't do President Kennedy as an impression, so I'll do James Mason doing President Kennedy. No, Sean Connery doing President Kennedy.
People of Berlin. Every free citizen of the world is a citizen of Berlin.
No, thank you, but no. I don't do this for applause. I do it for cash. It's much better. Anyway, he said, people of Berlin. I've lost my fucking accent now. People of Berlin, every free citizen of the world is a citizen of Berlin. And I wish to say to you, ich bin ein Berliner. And the crowd went fucking wild. Trouble is, ich bin ein Berliner means I am a donor. And this is true. It means I'm a donor. Ein Berliner is the name of a donut they have. Ich bin Berliner means I am from Berlin. But he said, I am a donut, you know. It's like if he'd toured before and he'd come through Hamburg. People of Berlin, I am a hamburger. You know? Then on to Frankfurt. I am a Frankfurter. I am a donut. It was one of those two. They're sort of into food in a way, you know. So the people in Berlin must have gone, yay! What did he say? He said it was a donut. That's what I thought he said. What does it mean? It means he's a donut. It's a slang thing. He's American. He's a donut. He's a fucking donut, you know? Fucking donut. You're fucking donut. You're a fucking donut.
You are listening to Bart Cop Radio at BartCop.com. Keeper of the Democratic Jewels.
Well, there you had it, the big show number 62. I'd like to thank the subscribers for subscribing, and the listeners for listening, and the readers for reading, and the contributors for contributing. as you know, we couldn't do this without you. We are trying to give you some bang for your buck there. Hopefully we're doing that. If I'm not, I'm sure you'll let me know. So, I'll get to work on show 63. I want everybody to have a nice Christmas. We're going to try to get another show in the can before the end of the year. Oh, 2005's got to be better than 2004. It just got to be. Okay, so thanks for listening. Thanks for contributing. Those of you who drop the occasional check in the mail, you make a lot of difference too. I'll get to work on the next show. Thanks for being there. Right out.